here for another edition of the Friar Phil Show, playing a little bit of Van Halen because we just lost Eddie Van Halen, unfortunately, to cancer at the age of 65 the other day. And what can you say? One of America's most fantastic guitarist. And the music of Van Halen, you know, that's something that was part of my childhood as well. So there you go, another piece of childhood dying. I don't want to start off morbid, so let's concentrate on things that are good. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Padres and what happened in our series against the Dodgers, and what I think AJ Preller should do over the winter and what needs improvement with the team. And I got it wrong last time. It's at SDFan21, and ET is here with us again to help me analyze all this stuff. How you doing?
Doing great, Firefield. Glad to be back.
Yes. Well, that was kind of disappointing. When we lost, you know, I had a, like I said in the video I did the other day, you know, I had a myriad of different emotions, you know, got tears in my eyes a little bit because it's a real loss, you know, when you have something every day, practically for months on end, and then suddenly it ends. You know, it's terrible. Yeah. It's like a relationship in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been to this, had this experience in almost 14 years. So, I mean, granted, it was a short season, only 60 games, and you know, 66 games pretty much felt like a whole entire 162 to us, because you know, we were riding the emotions, we were riding all the pitches, the at bats, the slams. It was just something, a roller coaster. But yet, you know, we had a lot of hope, and it was just a great moment that we haven't experienced in such a long time.
Oh, I know. It's been a good long time, but you know, it was fun after we beat St. Louis. Seeing everybody down at the stadium, and I think the players appreciated that too. Of course, it turned into the Dodger fans that are snarky Dodger fans saying, look, they celebrated the World Series already, you know. Screw you, you know. We won a damn series for the first time in a long, long time. People were happy and they were supporting the team. So I thought that show of support was really, really outstanding. And I commend all the fans of the team that were down there for doing that and showing them that they have the support.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's you know, it's been a tough past you know, last 14 years. You know, there's a lot of Padre fans that just wanted to party and celebrate that man of victory, especially, you know, losing to St. Louis and haven't had any, you know, we haven't had any postseason experience in winning. I mean, not actually have any winning. I mean,
right.
I mean, we've lost to St. Louis in 96. We lost to St. Louis in both 2005 and 2006. And we finally got over the hump. So we haven't had any really postseason winning since 1998. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a long time.
A lot of those kids, in a long time, and a lot of those kids that were celebrating out there, and a lot of fans, they weren't even born yet. So, I mean, I don't blame any of those guys going out there and just celebrating and partying a victory. You know, Dodger fans don't understand what San Diego, you know, what San Diego sports has been through, really. I mean, and granted, the Dodgers have won 8 straight NL West titles. You know, I look back at did some research on Dodger history. They've only been over 500, less than 500 five times since they won the World Series. So they have had success. They've been, you know, to them, winning a division series or anything like that, it's like, it's no big deal. For us, you got to understand, this is this is San Diego. The passionate fans of San Diego want to, you know, want to have a good time. They don't have that experience of having a winner here all the time. So
no, and because of the, I hate to call it cheapness, but the frugal nature of owners, you know, before the owners we have now, where they wouldn't really put up the money to get players and prospects and stuff. You know, we've gone through years and years of mediocre people playing Padres baseball. So when we had a team and you have a personality like Tatis Jr. or Manny Machado or any of the guys on the team, you have excitement building. And with Tatis especially, you know, he's built up the excitement for the fans the entire season. And, you know, how can you blame people for going out and acting like we won the World Series when we beat St. Louis, you know?
Exactly. I mean, this team is, you know, we arrived. I mean, a lot of, you know, over the last couple of years, they're saying, hey, when is this team going to actually compete for a championship? And, you know, even though it was a shortened season, I mean, we're here. We have arrived. We are relevant. And when other fans from other teams come, you know, bashing on other fans, our Padres, you know, that just says they're worried, because that just tells us that, you know, we have arrived. I mean, how many times did we, as Padre fans growing up, saw Barry Bonds and we'd boo the hell out of him? We'd boo the heck out of him at the stadium because we're afraid that he's going to hit a home run off, you know, off us. But yet we booed the heck out of him because he's a relevant player. He was a hell of a player. But now our team is here. Our team has arrived. We are relevant. We were showing that we could win. And that just comes from fear, because we're right behind their backs now. And, you know, because they haven't seen the Padres. Padres have been bottom dwellers for so long. And, you know, it's our time is coming. It reminds me of, you know, back in the day. I go back to 1990. Because basically the Preller era, the tenure of A.J. Preller, kind of reflects the 1990 Padres. Because back in 1990, Joe Carter came in. The Padres signed him. They're going to team him up with Bruce Hurst, Tony Gwynn, Bip Roberts, Roberto Alomar, Benito Santiago, Jack Clark. So all those guys, they were primed to make a run. Ed Whitson was on a part of the pitching staff. But unfortunately, 1990 did not come to fruition. It's kind of very similar to, say, 2015, when we brought in Matt Kemp, Justin Upton, all those guys, Derek Norris, all those guys came in to try to see if we can get in and, you know, make the playoffs, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
Nope.
You know, go to 91, 92, you know, there were some decent years there, but we didn't even make any postseason. 93 was the fire sale. You know, we had Sheffield, we had to ship Sheffield out. We had Fred McGriff. We had to ship him out. 94 was just, you know, terrible. So 93, 94 kind of reflects 2016, 2017. And then came 95 when we made the trade for Caminiti and Finley and Andujar Cedeno. And all these guys were like, okay, well, let's get these guys going and see if we can get a winner here. 1996, we went to won the NL West, beat the Dodgers three straight to get to the playoffs. Kind of similar to what happened this year. So 24 years later, it kind of came full circle. 1996 is kind of like 2020, where we got into the, you know, we, 96, they got into the playoffs. They lost to St. Louis. I mean, 96 was, you know, the Ken Caminiti MVP year. You know, everybody's excited. We're all jacked up. You know, we finally got over the hump with St. Louis this year. Then we ran into the Dodgers.
The dreaded Dodgers. I
mean, the freaking Dodgers. That's all. There's really nothing else to say about those guys. I mean, I did some research, you know, the last day or so, just to reflect on what the reason why the Padres are, you know, didn't really compete against the Dodgers. I mean, hell of a series with St. Louis, and, you know, but it was basically pitching, defense, and lack of hitting and runners in scoring position.
But, yeah, that was our undoing in that series.
Yeah, I mean, we took, you know, 2 weeks ago when we last talked, you know, that was one of our fears. You know, Clevinger got hurt at that time, and little did we know Lamet would get injured too. So I think losing those two starting pitchers, really affected the mentality of this of the team going into the playoffs.
Well, yeah, by the time it was the third game, the bullpen was worn out and stuff. But what pissed me off about the game was in the beginning, you know, when they had that guy that looks like he's got clown hair. What's his name? May?
Oh, May.
He looks like the evil clown in one of the horror movies. I forget which one it was in that had the clown. But anyhow, I'm digressing. It pissed me off because they were not having a good outing at that point. And we got, you know, people on base and we had a big chance to score, not really break away and take the game for sure. But, you know, three or four runs. And what did we get? Just one run, I think.
Exactly. I mean, it was foretelling when they played against St. Louis, and especially the first game and then game two. I mean, they put up a stat. I think it was on game two, and the Padres are like 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. Mm. And I think I posted that. I tweeted that. But I'm like, come on, man. You got it. And then they were struggling. They were scuffling at the plate. Guys were on base. They were over. I think they were over swinging, looking at, you know, thinking too much. And, you know, it was just hard to watch. And, you know,
it was. And, you know, the Dodgers, to their credit, you know, they don't do that. They don't overthink.
Yeah.
They go up there and they play small ball and they see what is needed at this time, you know, when I'm up at the plate. Do I need to try and hit a single? Should I hit a sacrifice fly to move the runners? You know, should I bunt?
I mean, their situational hitting is that good. I mean, if you look at, I mean, I was looking at the stats of the Padres and the Dodgers. The Dodgers are ranked number one in hitting at an average of .258. Their on-base percentage was .370, but even though the Padres hit more home runs than the Dodgers this postseason, the Dodgers lead the National League in postseason with 12 mm-hmm. doubles. So that says something that, well, they know that if they can get guys on, they can just continue to pile it on. And that's what they did in Game 3, unfortunately. They just kept piling it on.
Yeah, the line kept moving, you know.
The line kept moving, just like that Bugs Bunny cartoon. You know? Mm-hmm. They just kept going, yeah. So yeah, I mean, and they, you know, they think they lead the National League in walks as well. So it's just these guys know exactly how to hit, what happens in the situation, what needs to be done. They just move ball and move guys along the bases, and they just get key hits when necessary, and that's what's just ridiculous.
And I'm tired of the Padres not being able to do that. I hope that's something Jace Tingler addresses, especially in spring training, you know, to start going back to the fundamentals of baseball and teaching these kids, you know, how to get up there and maybe not swing for a home run every time, you know, to get the big hit and stuff. Sometimes you just need to get a single or a double or, like I said, a sacrifice fly, something or other. Well, one of the positives that came out of the series and the season for the Padres is the national attention we've got. I was on John Cantara's program on 97.3 The Fan the other day, and I was talking about that, about how one of the side effects of the season, and largely in part to Tatis Jr., we are front page news on most of these sports networks. It used to be that, you know, if they mentioned the Padres, they did it just because they had to, you know, and it'd be nothing, you know, the Padres were beat by the Cardinals 6-5, and that's all they would say, you know. And there'd be no highlights about the Padres. But now you see highlights, you know, on the major networks for the playoffs and stuff, and you've got Manny Machado, you've got Tatis, you've got Cronenworth I've seen in these promos, and San Diego is now in the lexicon of national sports writers and people that talk on TV or radio, and I think that's fantastic because, you know, our city deserves it. We've got a hell of a beautiful ballpark. We've got a good team. We have a wonderful city to live in. And it's about time, you know, San Diego got recognized as a full-fledged, you know, major league team and something to be reckoned with, I think, next season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Tatis Jr., they see the marketability in that kid and the play, the how the kid plays, how hard he plays, how just the plays that he makes on the field, both and off, the swagger, the hair, just the persona. They MLB sees him as something that they that can market that kid and market San Diego as an upcoming team for the next several years.
Oh yeah,
San Diego is a major league sports town. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when the Chargers left, it broke my heart when the Chargers left, and you know a lot of fans are were pissed off. I mean, I'm still pissed off.
Oh, I was. I was livid, and I think I'm still pissed off at Spanos for
exactly.
For,
I mean,
taking it away from us.
We can do a full hour of me talking about Spanos, but I'm not going to go there. But it's like, it's just, you know, we are a major league sports town. Yeah, granted, you know, there's a potpourri of people that come in to our town. I mean, military families come from all over. And, you know, you have Dodger fans, you have Cardinal fans, you have, you know, Raider fans all over the place here in San Diego. But, you know, we haven't had the longevity of a sports team that competes every single year. And, you know, maybe it's because of ownership and, they're not committing themselves to sports. And, you know, Spanos did the exact same thing. So it's like, you know, we're hungry. We're hungry to win a championship. I mean, we've had championships with the Sockers. We've had other championships as well. Little League championships we've won.
Right. Yeah, the Little League.
I mean, but we are starving for Major League sports. Whatever they do with the sports arena down there, they bring in an NBA team, NFL, NHL team. Heck, bring something back here that the fans in San Diego just want a major league sports. And, you know, not to knock any of the minor league sports or any of the other sports in town, but, you know, you see what happened last week when the Padres advanced. It's just everybody, it's a different level. It's a different state of mind. And,
oh, yeah, people went crazy in the gas lamp.
It is.
And it was fantastic. You know, more than just a championship, I want that too, and a lot of people want that. But I think people want a consistent team that consistently wins. You know, yeah. You don't expect them to win every day, but a team like this that is a winner and can win, you know, is going to draw a lot more fans to the stadium. And I will admit, you know, when we've had the crappy teams that would lose and lose and lose, I would just say, well, I'll stay at home and look at the game, you know, instead of wasting the money going to the stadium. You know, as much as I love Petco Park, you know, you know what it costs to go to a game, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes I'd be frugal and just say, fuck it. You know, I'm going to just stay home and skip it. Because they'll probably lose anyhow against, you know, the Dodgers or whoever. So now we don't have that. I don't have that worry with this team. And if anything, you know, I trust A.J. Preller. He's going to do some amazing stuff during the off season, during the winter. And I think he will concentrate on pitching. We need a stable and good 5-man rotation that can be counted on every 5 days. We can't have, you know, this shit like with Chris Paddock. You know, one day he's Paddock, one day he's Baddock.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have that. You got to have, if you're going to be a winner and you're going to compete with the Dodgers, you have to have pitchers that can go out there every 5 days and do the job and go like 5 or 6, 7 innings, you know, not just this goddamn 2-inning thing, and then you get pulled out. So I'm sure AJ Preller is going to work on that over the winter break, and I like I said, I hope Jace Tingler and the coaches, especially the hitting coach, address that problem that we have where we can't bat runners in and we're coming up to the plate, you know, with the bases loaded and we're swinging at balls and over swinging, you know, to try and get the big hit, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and that's the two things, you know, I see that needs to be improved with the Padres if we're going to be competitive and if we're going to be like what Zach Mann on Twitter said, you know, if we're going to come for their ass, you know, we have to have the ammunition and the stuff to do it, you know, good pitching, timely hitting. And unfortunately, you know, in this series, we didn't have that, and the Dodgers did. And this is why the Dodgers are a number one seed team. Yeah. This is why the Dodgers are playing Atlanta. We don't have any reason to be pissed off at the Dodgers for winning. As Padres fans, as far as I'm concerned, now I'll probably get people tweeting me about this. Because there's always something, you know, that displeases somebody on Twitter. But I just can't bring myself to get really pissed off at the Dodgers for winning, you know. They're that good. Did everything correctly. They didn't cheat, you know. They didn't have garbage cans to bang on like the Astros.
The Astros.
So, I mean, They did a good job, and what can you say, you know? Godspeed and good luck, you know?
Good luck, yeah. I mean, if you look back at the pitching of the Padres, that was pretty much what hurt them. I mean, I looked at the stats. They had the NL worst. This is the playoff teams that advanced. I mean, they had an NL worst 6.23 ERA. They walked 32. Who walks 32 people in six games?
I mean, yeah.
That just means you're not even hitting the strike zone. You're just completely not knowing where it's going. You had 36 earned runs. You gave up 56 hits. I mean, you're talking about 56 hits in six games. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Zero quality starts because, you know, they didn't have a starter. I mean, we had the, you know, Davies, unfortunately, didn't pitch well, and Paddock didn't pitch well, and you know we had to go with a bullpen and the bullpen games, and it's just the opponents were hitting .269 against them. That's the worst in the playoffs. So when you combine that and your inability to hit with runners in scoring position, they struck out. Padres struck out 57 times.
Wow.
Yeah, right behind Atlanta. Believe it or not, Atlanta has struck out 63 times so far in the postseason. So,
wow.
But what's surprising is that the Padres were number one in total bases. I mean, granted, they played one more game than the Dodgers in Atlanta, but that means they got on base a lot. I mean, they had the best slugging percentage at .413. They drove in 26 RBIs. They had 28 runs, which is second to L.A., 30. They had the most home runs. They stole the most bases in the NL with six. They had a batting average at .244, believe it or not. They had an on-base percentage at .328, which is behind the Dodgers at .370. They walked 24 times, which was number two behind the Dodgers with 27. They had an OPS of .742, number two behind the LA at .753. So, like they say, it's just a matter of, I guess you can say it's a matter of inches. It's a matter of execution, in my opinion, because, I mean, if you look at all those stats, they were right behind the Dodgers in hitting. They just could not get through anybody in when people were on base.
Yeah, and that's the big problem.
That was the big problem, and you strike out, you know, second is to the Braves in strikeouts, and, I mean, I don't know if MLB, I looked up MLB.com's stats, but, I mean, apparently they had an 8-for-49 with runners in scoring position. That's a .163. So I'm not sure, you know, whether that's correct or updated or not. But if you had a .163 with runners in scoring position, you're not going to win any playoff games or going any further. And when you look at the pitching, also, I mean, they weren't going to. It's tough to think that they were going to sustain a bullpen session all this, you know.
Not the way Tingler was doing it. I found it weird, you know, that we used 11 pitchers and he would let somebody just stay in for one inning, especially if they were hot and good and hitting the zone. You know, there were a couple of times where there were a couple of the guys that went out that were doing fine and probably could have eaten up two or three innings, you know, to save having to do the bullpen. So I still don't understand why Tingler did that. I don't think anybody from the mainstream sports press asked him, but that just drove me crazy. So now, conversely, you know, Dodger fans out there, yeah, stop puffing your chest out and shit, you know. You played us with a very disadvantage, a big disadvantage, you know. We just heard the stats about the Padres. They're pretty much almost even with you. But we lost our two starting pitchers. You know, if they lost Kershaw and Ferris Bueller, if they lost them, you know, they'd be screwed and they'd have to do a bullpen thing too. And things might have not worked out too well for them. So, you know, if you want to puff out your chest, do it when we have a Padres team where we have a good rotation of five starters and stuff, and we learn to hit and get timely hits. Then, if you beat us, then you can puff out just a little bit because it was an even competition. But this wasn't an even competition. This was the Padres with a big, big disadvantage with the problem with Clevinger and the problem with Lamette and the problem with Paddock and his magic mirror.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to explain Chris Paddock next year. I mean, the kid's got to work it, you know, coming in the off season, he's got to figure it out. Either change his mechanics, study what he did wrong. I mean, when you look in, if you just YouTube him from 2019, his fastball was moving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
He was high, but it was right in the strike zone. He was pretty much pinpointing everything. I don't know, you know, he developed a curveball. He's got to be more confident with that. Got to be more confident with changeup, work that cutter more, work that, you know, figure out his fastball, what he wants to do with it. Come up with another out pitch. I mean, come up with something that just maybe a slider. You know, I had a couple guys say he needs us to develop a slider. I mean, he's got to go out there and just figure it out because, I mean, he's got the potential to be a good pitcher. It's right now, it's all, you know, it's all up there in his head that something's got to work on in the off season.
Yeah, and if he doesn't, you know, I don't see him being part of the rotation, you know. Ron Fowler wants to win, and we can't afford to do that anymore, and they're not doing it. That's the great thing about this ownership, you know. They're not doing that. They're not saying, okay, we'll settle and we'll see if everything's okay and, you know, not do anything, you know, before the trade deadline or over the off season. We've got a ownership that wants to win and get that championship to San Diego. So any way they have to do it, you know, they're going to do it. And sorry, you know, if it bruises your ego, that's too goddamn bad. You know, the object of playing a baseball game is to win the game, not to lose it or make excuses or, you know, complain about fans being against you or talking to your magic mirror, you know, mirror on the wall. Who's the best pitcher of them all? Is it me, Chris Paddock?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the point of this little rant is that, you know, like I said, they're not going to settle for that, I don't think, next season. And I'm really, really confident that A.J. Preller, like I said earlier, will go out and get some good arms for our pitching rotation to join Clevinger and Lamette. And maybe Davies will stick around.
Well, I think most of us, most of the players are going to be here till 2022, I believe. So,
yeah.
I think the guys that I think may not be around maybe would be Kirby Yates. I read Kirby Yates, possibly Profar maybe, and then another guy. But it's just
Garrett
that,
Richards.
Yeah, Garrett Richards. And speaking of Garrett Richards, I mean, I would have given him a start.
Yeah, I would have too.
He's a veteran. I didn't see any reason why he didn't start any of these postseason games. I mean, maybe Tingler lost confidence in him. I don't know. I think maybe they thought Paddock, Paddock is the future of this ball club, so let's give him a start here and let's see.
Yeah, but he's been crappy. That's what I couldn't understand.
Yeah,
we're going to have Paddock in game four.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, if we don't lose game three, we'll lose fucking game four. Yeah. Yeah, I would have put in somebody that was in game three, like you said, somebody that's experienced, somebody that's a veteran that can handle the emotion and pressure and everything of a playoff game. You know, after his last outing where it was crap, you know, he said, Paddock, he said he was like emotionally drained or some shit like that.
You can't have that.
And this ownership's not going to have it. You know, God damn it, it's time for us to be competitive. It's time for us to get rid of the Dodgers out of first place. I'm so fucking sick of that team. I really am. And it reminds me of in the 70s and into the 80s where I was sick of the goddamn New York Yankees. Yeah, I grew up as a Mets fan, as many of you know, and I just couldn't stand the Yankees. And every year it seemed like it was either the Yankees and the Dodgers or the Yankees and this one in the World Series and the Yankees winning. And when a different team finally won out of the American League, I was happy as a pig in shit. But yeah, now I'm sick of the Dodgers, too. L.A., Dodgers, we're fantastic. Yeah, well, we're fantastic, too. We just have to tweak some things. And this was like, not really an audition, but it was like a preview of what's to come, I think.
Yeah, we're almost there. I mean, we're not, we didn't even expect it to be. I mean, everybody was saying, pushing, 2021, 2022, that's when we're actually going to compete. And I'm like, well, it's here. It's now. We're here. We're 4-9 against the Dodgers. We knew a lot of the games were pretty close, except that last one. But still, we're not that far away from actually competing for an NL West title and to get that recognition as being one of the best teams in baseball. So, I mean, just a few things here. I mean, I don't know what A.J. Preller's going to do, whether if everybody clamors to get Bauer, but Trevor Bauer is going to be, that's an arm and a leg.
Yeah, that's going to have a price tag.
Contract, or whatever, but, he would fit nicely in the rotation. I don't know if Masahiro Tanaka would be a guy there. I mean, in the bullpen, yeah, I mean, I posed, how about Blake Treinen? He's going to be a free agent. He's a Dodger, but, he's still got a live arm. I'd rather have him rather than Stam and some other folks, but he's a good solid arm. I mean, heck, why not even bring in Jock Peterson? I mean, the dude kills us. I mean, he somehow rakes against Padre pitching.
Oh,
He can play DH. He can even kind of play some left field. Another guy, I mean, Justin Turner, for crying out loud, he's a veteran. Why not get him? Just guys like, you kind of look in the waiver, you look at the free agent wire, and he's like, hey, how about these guys? But, that's the next 4 months to kind of ponder that. I mean, there's going to be some names. I mean, there could be some surprise trades. We don't know. I know Preller's relationship with Texas. You never know. Maybe he makes a trade for somebody in Texas. I don't know. Maybe Lance Lynn comes in for something.
Yeah, by the trade deadline, a lot of people wanted Lynn to come over here.
So I really don't know. I mean, are they confident in bringing in Mackenzie Gore in next year's rotation? Or is Patino going to be ready to possibly get a start? Morahone. I mean, when you think of Morahone, I mean, the kid's got some great, great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, how many times do you see him? I mean, when Tingler puts in a guy, and this is what, like you said, bullpen days just irk the hell out of me, because if a guy's mentality, if you go up to a pitcher, perhaps say a Morahone like that, and say, hey, you know what, I want you to pitch at least 5 innings today. I want you to go in there and pitch the hell out against the Dodgers. And rather than say, oh, hey, you know, Morahone, I want you to go pitch just 2.5 innings. Or, you know, there's a mentality that shifts there. It's like, okay, well, I'm only going to be in for 2 innings compared to I'm going to pitch the hell out of this game and see if I can get as many guys out and pack
right.
my bullpen. So it's just that approach. I mean, of course, you know, we questioned that what Tingler did. I mean, you don't have the worst ERA in the National League, and you're trying to scuffle against one of the best team in the National
right.
League. So it's stuff like that. I mean, Tingler even said himself he's a big second guesser. And sometimes, you know, when he's, you know, perhaps the second guessing to start Paddock in game one against St. Louis, you know, may have got the best of him. But I don't understand why you go in there, you bring in a guy who's been relieving all year, and you know you don't have Clevinger, you don't have Lamet, and you just stick Morahone in there and say, just give me 2 innings, and then here comes Stammen for another 2. And then, and, you know, it's just that you got to, especially in the playoffs, that was what hurt us, is with the, you know, the bullpen, get in there. I mean, that game against St. Louis worked, but in game 3 when we won, it wasn't going to work with the Dodgers.
No.
It's the Dodgers.
And especially if you're changing pitchers every goddamn inning. You know, like
exactly.
I said, a couple of them were doing really good and could have eaten up 2 or 3 innings
yes.
worth of time, where you don't have to change every inning
yeah.
for a different bullpen pitcher, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that would have made the difference. That would have, you know, quelled some of the scoring that the Dodgers yeah. did in the last game. But, I mean, you know, we didn't really have a chance to even come back at that point once it got to be 12 runs.
Yeah. It was just a mess. I mean, it was You can't just throw your arms out there. You know, let's put in Austin Davison. Let's put all these guys in, and then expect, you know, to advance. I mean, if you know, say the Padres did go to the NLDS against, NLCS against Atlanta. I mean, these guys their arms would be falling off, and we didn't have any starting pitching to begin with, so. These guys had to come in, kind of lock down and figure things out, and it was just going to be an uphill climb. I mean, yeah, it was just an uphill climb to begin with,
the Padres fans out there that are still depressed or upset that we lost and didn't advance and stuff have to realize, you know, we were playing like we've talked about, you know, with a big disadvantage, so there's nothing really to be ashamed of or sad about, you know.
Oh, no.
Actually,
no.
We should be proud of what happened. And while I'm criticizing Ting Ding for, you know, changing pitchers every inning, you know, somebody said to me, well, you're not a Major League Baseball coach. I'm like, well, I don't give a shit. I wouldn't have changed pitchers. But while I'm criticizing him for that, you know, he's been fantastic the whole season as a rookie manager. A rookie manager got this team into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the history, there's only been five, I mean, look back at the history, there's only been five first-year managers in the history of baseball to ever win a World Series. And what he's done, as much as we criticize the decisions that he made with the pitching staff and all that, Tingler's the guy that brings us possibly a championship in the future. I mean, he relates well with his players. If you compare him to Andy Green over the last several seasons, I mean,
mm-hmm.
very telling of what Andy Green and, you know, his relationship with Will Myers, very telling how the team responded to Green last year when they knew it was pretty much done. These guys didn't give up on it. They played for Tingler, and I think Tingler's got the ability to relate to his players and to coach him really well. And they really got a good coaching staff too.
Yeah, they do. Like I said, my only complaint is that the hitting coach needs to get these guys back to fundamentals and teach them how to you know, pull back a bit. You know, if it's
Damian Easley
warranted.
And Damian Easley's done a fine job. I mean, look what he's done with. Overall, he's did a fine job this year. I mean, look what he did with Will Myers. I mean,
mm-hmm.
He completely changed his stance. Will Myers goes out there, and he doesn't really swing so much at wild pitches anymore, but he's more focused. And when you get a guy like Will Myers, who was scuffling over the last couple of years, and we all the fans were like pretty much giving up on him.
Yeah, I was too. But what a wonderful story this year with him making the comeback that he did.
Exactly. I mean, with what Damian Easley did to him, just got his game back, figured out where he needed to be, mindset especially. Because there are times where you see Will Myers out there in out of the outfield kind of daydreaming. Mm-hmm. We saw that all the time the last couple of seasons. But, yeah, I think the coaching staff did a great job with these guys.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Sleepy Will Myers. He could be one of the seven dwarfs if he was shorter. But anyhow, so what do you think about next season? I told you what I think they have to work on. What do you think will improve this team next season and get us closer to really competing with the Dodgers for first place and finally knocking them out? And other teams, too, maybe knocking them out and coming in second place and putting them in third place. You know, I just dream of things like that. And sorry to the Dodger fans that follow me, but it's just like a wet dream sometimes to think about the Dodgers not being in first place and being in third or fourth place and being sucky and having problems. So we can puff our chest out and say, we're fantastic and you suck.
Yeah.
You know, just once, just one season, I'd like to do that.
Yep. You got to, in order to be the best, you got to beat the best, I said. But
right.
To me, I think, I think everything starts with starting pitching. Davies, I think, will be back. I mean, he's a good starter. He showed that his changeup works well. Paddock is a question mark. I mean, I think hopefully he brings back his 2019. I think starting pitching with, he also has to depend on Lamet and Clevenger's injury. Will they recover? I don't know really. No one's really said the full extent of their injuries, so that kind of affects what players. Preller is going to do in the offseason, whether he's going to go for another starter, which I think they do. They need possibly another veteran starter. I think the bullpen looks pretty good. Rosenthal is a free agent this year, so I think they need to sign him. Unfortunately, I think Kirby Yates may not be back. But then you still got Pomeranz, you still got Austin Davis. I know Wingding's coming back. Let's see how effective he's going to be.
Yeah. Wingding. I forgot about Wingding. Whatever fuck his name is. You know when that happened? I really, really, it wasn't a bit. I really couldn't say his name. And I couldn't remember the pronunciation for it. So, Wingetter, Wingdingy, Wing, Hot Wings, whatever the hell his name is. I really couldn't say it. I think that's one of the funniest moments of last season was the Wingding thing. And props to Ben and Woods and that program for perpetuating that as well and using it as a drop. Anyhow, you were telling me about what you think needs to be done to improve for the season. Next season.
Yeah, Mackenzie Gore, is he going to be ready to start next year? Is Michael Baez going to be put in the mix? What's Morahone's role going to be? So it all, to me, it starts with starting pitching and the bullpen. In terms of our lineup, I think it looks fairly good. Cronenworth pretty much played. I'm pretty sure, you wouldn't surprise me if he kind of struggles next year because teams are going to look at Cronenworth's bat and try to pitch him differently. I'm very excited what Tatis is going to bring next year. I mean, he's after this loss, he's going to be more motivated, including Machado and Hosmer. I mean, with Hosmer, there's something, he's got to get his head out of the gutter sometimes when it comes to his defense.
Right.
I mean, I think he's made some bad plays. He's not making the defense. Hopefully it changes next couple of years, but he's not making the plays when at defense, but it doesn't knock how well he played and how well he's overall played and how He was good. He was, you know, batted 287 at the plate.
Right.
He was red hot the first week before he got hurt. So, you know, granted, he was coming off an injury with a broken finger. I mean, Pham's going to be pretty good. I mean, I think we'll see what his hamate bone hard reacts next year. He's still got another year left. Machado, of course, I expect big things from him. So I think, and you know, catching with Nola, I think I heard that he was injured, so he was pretty scuffling the last couple weeks of the season. You know, he scuffled in the postseason as well. So, but he did a great job with the pitching staff when he had a lot of shutouts and he knew how to call games. So I think overall the lineup looks pretty good. Maybe another bat. Like the guys I mentioned before, I'm not sure who's out there in free agency, but maybe another solid bat, possibly to play DH. I mean, Mitch Moreland, he's going to be back, I think, one more year. I mean, he was actually our best hitter in the postseason. He was 4-for-8 with batting .500, so I wish he had seen more at-bats, but, you know, with Hosmer playing first and a lot of they just didn't put him in, especially with Profar was playing pretty good going in.
Yeah.
I think we're quite there yet. We're not quite there yet. I think, some of the kids will be coming up. We're going to see how they perform. And I'm really excited to see what Gore does. I mean, just imagine what Ryan Weathers did in the postseason. Imagine how he came in. You know, that's his first appearance ever in the major leagues against the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah, man. I tell you, that was very, that was very impressive, you know. And
for a 20-year-old kid, too, 20
yeah,
years old.
Yeah, I would have been shitting my pants if I had to do that. You want me to pitch against the Dodgers? Are you out of your goddamn mind?
You're 2 years out of high school, and you're like, I'm in the playoffs in the National League Division Series against one of the best teams in baseball, and you want me to go out there and shut it down?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes out there and shuts it down. So, I mean, how do you not applaud that? I mean, that was a hell of an outing, especially that's your first outing. You're 20 years old, for crying out loud.
I think a lot of credit goes to his dad, too, for preparing for that sort of thing.
I saw a picture of him and his dad. His dad sitting nervous, pretty much sweating. He's like, yeah. Going back in time, and like, oh, man. I'm more nervous than my kid out there. I used to pitch in the league for the Yankees. So David Weathers is probably a wreck.
It was fantastic. So, to sum it up, I feel very positive towards the future.
Yeah.
I think 2021 is going to be a great season. You know, first of all, if we can have the 162 games, and secondly, that us fans can actually go back into the ballpark. You know, I hope this COVID situation fixes itself by spring, you know?
I think it's a big anticipation when we get to Petco Park. I mean, we have a team, we have players that are winning, that are winners. We have a team that just will go out there and play every day, play pretty well. And we just, we're excited about that. We're excited about going into 2021. The expectations are high. You know, I mean, we're going to be going back and realizing we hadn't been at the ballpark in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
If you think about that, it's just like...
It'll be like going back to the ballpark or to the ballpark for the first time again, like it was 2004 all over again.
Exactly. And, you know, and going back in time, it'll be over, like almost maybe 15 months. Since we'd step in. I mean, I think Fan Fest was the last time I stepped in that.
Oh, yeah, and who imagined, at Fan Fest, who imagined that, you know, we'd have, first of all, you know, the most serious thing about this whole thing is the COVID virus, you know, who thought we would have that? Who thought we would suspend the baseball season and say fans can't come to the stadium. Who thought that we'd have a 60-game season, you know, and the Padres would do as good as they did? Yeah, yeah, back at FanFest, I couldn't. I was looking forward to the season. I wanted to see, you know, what Tatis was going to do this year, Machado and everything.
No one saw it coming. No one saw it coming to affect baseball that way. I mean, this coronavirus really affected, you know, the world. I mean, it's just terrible. I just hope things happen to, you know, get things out the way we can go back to normal again.
Oh, I do too. But people, you know, have to be cooperative with this. They've got to wear a mask.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know how many times I go up to the store up the corner, you know, and I see, especially young people, I see walking down the street, you know, with each other without any mask on. Or what really gets me is the ones that walk around with a mask on and they have their goddamn nose sticking out of it. Why the fuck have the mask on if you got your damn nose sticking out of it?
It's a mouth guard for Phil.
I guess, you know, but, you know, just real dumbass people that do that. And unfortunately, it's the dumbass people that keep perpetuating this coronavirus, you know. So if we don't all do what we need to do to stop it in its tracks, you know, I'm afraid, you know, we'll have a baseball season, but I'm afraid we may not be able to go back to the ballpark if we still have the amount of cases of COVID that's, you know, coming up in our state.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
now
I just think that you know, people got to understand, you know, I mean, whether you believe that this thing, you know, is I mean, 211,000 people are gone in 7 months.
Yeah,
so that pretty much should tell you already that this is a serious virus. And if you don't take precautions for yourself, you know, it's an asymptomatic virus. And yet, if you don't just wear a mask, what's the hurt in wearing a mask? There's really nothing, no big deal. It's just I'm wearing a mask. There's, you know, God help the guy who comes after me is for wearing a mask one day, because I'll give it to him. But it's just like, it's not a big deal. It's just a mask. And this thing is temporary. It doesn't change who you are. It doesn't make you look any different. It's just because you're protected. When I wear a mask, I protect you. I protect your grandparents. I protect your parents. Because I don't know if I even have it or not. I mean, there are times where I think I had it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a cough earlier this year, around March and April. I had some sort of congestion. You know, I don't know if that was it or not. But I'm not going to take any chances, and I'm not going to take any chances for knowing what would happen to me if I had it. So I'm not taking any chances with that. I mean,
and we just had a big example, you know, with the orange idiot in the White House not wearing a mask, you know, saying to begin with that it was a hoax and stuff. So he ends up getting it, and then he comes back to the White House, and you can see him literally gasping for air, you know, and in some of the comments and tweets about it, you know, nurses and doctors were actually tweeting and saying what was going on. So I don't think he's all that well to begin with, as much as we're being told. And, you know, I don't want to delve into politics here, but, you know, that there was a prime example of why not wearing a mask is not a good idea. You can be the president of the United States and still get this coronavirus. So, like I said, I hope and pray that it goes away, or at least it gets to the point where we could go to ballparks. You know, you'd still have to wear a mask probably, but we could at least congregate like that coming up for the 2021 season.
I hope Americans understand what's going on. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, today, if you look on Twitter and see what's going on in Texas A&M football games this afternoon, this morning, I mean, it was like 25% capacity, almost, you know, it was pretty packed there, and everybody's standing next, like, they're like, COVID is done already. So, I mean, You know, I mean, we can get into politics for our film, but unfortunately, it could get me in trouble.
Oh, me too. You know,
and we could go. I believe me, we can talk for hours about this.
Oh well, yeah. I, before I started doing Friar Phil, I did a political podcast. You know, it was a progressive liberal podcast. You know, I'm not a conservative. I'm not, you know, dumb as a fucking brick. So yeah, that, I'm not a Republican. But, you know, as far as sports and baseball is concerned, in my Twitter, you know, I try to stay away from politics and, you know,
exactly.
And look at everybody as I don't care, you know, what your color is, what your ethnic background is. I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat or independent. You know, we're all baseball fans on my Twitter. And, you know, that's why I do what I do, you know, and some people get really pissed off, you know, when they see I've got Dodger fans that follow me. But these people are really nice people. They've been kind to me. They've been good sportsmen. And, you know, I see myriads of bad Dodgers fans, and I block those assholes. You know, I block them right away, just like I block an asshole Padres fan. You know, I want to keep things nice, and it's your rival team and stuff, you know. Why do you have Dodger fans that's our rival team on your Twitter? How dare you, Friar Phil? But the thing is, we're all just people, too.
Yeah.
You know,
we're all just
we can get competitive and do all that shit, you know, when we're having a game and stuff. But when we're not having a game and stuff, they're just, you know, baseball fans that happen to be with another team.
Yeah.
So I don't see any problem with it. You know, somebody listening to this may have a problem with it. You know, like I said, the people that go around, you know, that really hate the Dodgers and think, you know, because you hate the Dodgers, you have to hate all Dodger fans, you know. And these Dodger fans that follow me have learned that I'm hitting the microphone. Sorry about that. The Padres fans are not that bad either, because, you know, we've got a reputation as Padres fans. You know, the people that are on Twitter, at least, that go and spam the tweets of other teams, you know, when they lose or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got it back a little bit, you know, after we lost this game. And I was getting kind of pissed off looking at it. But then I got reminded by one of them that, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. You know, your people, you know, Friar Phil, your people go around to other teams and give them hell with memes and stuff. So, you know, if you can't take it, don't dish it out, in other words. But
Padres Twitter is probably one of the funniest things, what these guys do after victories. I enjoy the little rants, the little memes, the cartoons, it's great fun. It's just, you know, I mean, and that's the thing, it's just great fun. But there's a lot of fans out there who take this so seriously. We as fans, we're just fans. We have no control of what these players do. We're not behind a joystick or anything. So sometimes they take it to heart, and they'll take, like, they're personally insulted. I mean, like I said, the tweet I had on Trent Grisham the day of when we lost game three. You know, I just said that Trent Grisham was, you know, possibly going to be really good, and he's got to match his mouth where his bat is and stuff like that. You know,
right.
I think Dodger fans will hate him even more if he's able to match his bat with his mouth. And, you know, I had a Dodger fan call me out and say, hey, you know, Trent Grisham is bad. He's a crap. He's done this. I'm like, dude, just. And
right.
I just told him, hey, you know, I think he's going to be good. You know, and enjoy your Dodgers and move on. You know, and good luck to the Dodgers against the Braves. And I'm like, I'm not going to go waste my time and argue with you.
I don't argue with the goddamn Dodger fans that have a hard on for Manny, you know.
I
Manny Machado is bad. He's lazy. He, shut the fuck up, you know, unless you're watching him every day as a Padres fan. And seeing what he actually does, you know, shut up. He's been great for the clubhouse. He's been great for the other people. He's come off as a leader in some cases. And you know, I can't say enough about Manny Machado. Maybe, you know, he's not the fastest runner to first base, you know. Maybe the guy just doesn't run fast, you know. I can't run fast anymore. The only time I would be running is if somebody was chasing me with a gun. Besides that, you know, I can barely walk. So, you know, we all have our physical limitations. And maybe Manny just isn't a runner. You know, some people aren't. Some people are speedy, like Mateo.
Yeah.
That kid's really fast.
I mean, Manny, yeah, he struggled at the beginning of the season. We were wondering when he was going to break out. You know, they're saying, okay, well, he's just had a year in a National League. He was always in the American League. You know, he played for the Dodgers to the postseason. He's trying to transition. But when he got hot, I mean, there was no other player on the Padres that, you know, would be, you know, he would be my MVP for the Padres for sure. I mean, the dude was player of the month, the player of the week, or whatever for July and August. It was just it was June and July. But yeah, anyway, he was just on a roll. He was hitting balls. He was hitting home runs. It was ridiculous. Playing great defense, and he showed his leadership. And we are lucky to have a player like that of his caliber.
We're lucky to have the players that we have, you know, and the team that we have. So everybody's just got to reflect on that now, you know, and think about what the good of what we had this season and understand, you know, while we wanted to go further, it probably was unrealistic with our pitching situation. So we're running out of time. Thanks for joining me again today and doing a little bit of a wrap up and stuff about the Padres for the 2020 season, and hopefully we'll meet again on here during the 2021 season as well.
Well, thank you, Phil, for having me on today again. Hopefully this time around we'll be at Petco Park.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast or just chit-chatting, having a beer.
I hope so. All right, you take care.
Looking forward to 2021.
Yeah.
You too.
All right. And, yeah, we're out of time. We're going to start the music. There it goes. That tells me we're out of time. This is not the last podcast. I've got a couple more things to say and do, so there may be one or two more podcasts coming your way. So, in the meantime, thank you for listening. Take care of yourself. Wear your mask. And, by all means, keep it lit.